Hello, it's Debbie back on February 3rd, Wednesday, and reading the e-edition for the Herald and Review off the web. Starting with, new homeless shelter needs volunteers to expand service. This is by Teresa Churchill, H&R senior writer. Open 3 nights so far this winter to shelter the homeless from single-digit temperatures. Room at the inn is gearing to open more often. The Reverend Todd McClellan, pastor of City of Praise Church, said he's taking advantage of the warmer weather to recruit enough volunteers to use his fellowship hall as an emergency shelter whenever temperatures dip below 20 degrees. Up to now, 10 degrees has been the trigger to open. If you have a string of days below 20 degrees, you'll tire out your volunteers if you don't have at least 25 people, McClellan said. Room at the Inn started out as a collaboration between City of Praise and Way of Life Christian Center, opened for the first time January 12th, and was also open the next week on January 17th and 18th. Ralph Alston, 54, initially mistaken for a volunteer and put to work setting up, was the only resident of the shelter the first night, but as the news spread, Room at the Inn hosted 12 people January 17th and 15 January 18th. Alston lives with his sister and her family, and he said he takes every chance he gets to give them some privacy. I appreciate that what they're doing here at City of Praise, Alston said. It's a wonderful place to stay. His friend Charlotte Smith, 46, is living under similar circumstances, staying with her daughter. I'm with a lot of people every day at Oasis, and I give this church a lot of respect for taking us in, Smith said. It's nice to know there are people out there who care. The Decatur Family YMCA bused people from Oasis Daycare for the Homeless to City of Praise on January 17th, but the church took on that duty January 18th because it was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The Good Samaritan Inn provided sandwiches the first 2 nights, but City of Praise served up a hot meal the third. McClellan said Love Fellowship Christian Church and Church of the Living God Temple 4 are among other churches that have also offered to help with donations and visitors and volunteers. Most are saying they want to help however they can, he said. The new shelter grew out of a letter to the editor co-authored by Joyce Keller and Lee Taylor and published in the Herald and Review in 2014 calling for churches to open their doors to the homeless during extreme cold and heat. Getting little response, the pair met November 4th. November 4th with representatives of City of Praise Church and Way of Life Christian Center to get something started. Tara Robinson, a member of the City of Praise, said things have gone well with donations of warm clothing, a television, and other goods going a long way to make shelter residents more comfortable. Stephen Chenoweth, 42, said he was glad to get a break January 18th from the Salvation Army's men's shelter, which is filled to overflowing this time of year. I heard about this through a friend, Chenoweth said. It's awesome. End of the article. Continuing with the front page, government and politics, Rahner says state purchasing rules hinder efficiency. This is by Dan Perella, the Springfield bureau chief for the Herald and Review. Springfield. Governor Bruce Rahner is backing a plan to revamp the way the state buys goods and services, changes he said would save taxpayers more than $500 million a year and free up money for higher education and other services. Funding for universities, community colleges, and grants to low-income students has become the latest crisis point in a budget impasse that's now in its eighth month, and Rahner offered procurement reform as a possible way to provide money. He's threatened to veto a bill Democrats passed last week that would fund community colleges and grants through the monetary award program because he says there's no way to pay its $721.5 million price tag. Meanwhile, Comptroller Leslie Munger is urging fellow Republican Rahner and Democrats in the General Assembly to adopt a balanced budget, saying the state will be $6.2 billion further in debt by the end of the year if that doesn't happen. Standing with lawmakers Tuesday at Illinois State Fairgrounds, Rauner said the state's procurement rules, many of them created in the wake of scandals surrounding now-imprisoned Governor Rod Blagojevich, are a tangle of red tape that can triple or quadruple the time it takes to make purchases and cost the state millions. Procurement has been one of the largest sources of waste and abuse in our state, Rauner said. It's frustrating, the level of incompetence and inefficiency in the system, and we really need to change this as quickly as we possibly can. The governor's office says the proposal would give colleges and universities more purchasing flexibility, allow vendors to more easily fix mistakes in their registration with the state, and put one chief procurement officer in charge of the process rather than the current four, among other changes. It also would require the Auditor General to review the state's procurement every 2 years. State Representative Dan Brady, a Bloomington Republican, is the House sponsor of the bill. He said state university presidents have been critical of the current rules. Such changes would help them substantially, said Brady, whose district includes Illinois State University. Our state universities are at a crisis point. In fact, they've crossed the crisis point, and they are looking for help, a lifeline. Universities backed the Democratic bill that Rauner said he would veto. Republicans offered an alternative plan that would fund universities at 80% of what they received in fiscal year 2015. It would also fund community colleges at 90% and fully fund MAP grants. But the $1.7 billion in funding would be tied to a measure giving Rauner a new authority to shift money around in the budget. Republican senators Chapin Rosa Mahomet and Dale Ryder Mattoon last week proposed instead tying the funding to procurement reform. In response to questions about whether Rauner supports the idea, the governor's office sent an email highlighting the following comment from Tuesday's news conference. Quote, "What we can't do is spend money we don't have. That's not an option. We've got to stop spending money we don't have. If we get structural reform, it'll free up resources to be able to put into our schools and our human services where it belongs." Munger said at a news conference in Chicago that the state is going to spend $1.2 billion more than last year in the Department of Human Services and Department of Health Care and Family Services due to court orders and consent decrees. Coupled with $5 billion in lost revenue from the partial rollback of the temporary state income tax increase, that will drive the state $6.2 billion further into debt. Illinois must pass a budget, and we must reclaim our controls over spending and revenue, Munger said. We must stop the financial bleeding and start healing. Next in education, school board aims to cut $3.9 million. This is by Valerie Wells, staff writer. Decatur. The Decatur School Board is considering some $3.9 million in budget cut for the 2016-17 school year, largely due to the state budget impasse. For Decatur, that was a loss of $800,000, and then the state didn't make its final payment for the year. With no state budget yet and no sign of one for this fiscal year, and districts beginning to try to figure out a budget for their 2016-17 school year, making a budget for the coming year requires a lot of guesswork. The state has promised to fund 92% of the foundation level, and the Illinois State Board of Education plans to ask legislators to raise the foundation level from $6,119 per student to $6,327. I have no confidence the state will pay that 92%, board member Dan Oakes said. Their tendency to forget to send the last check scares me. With so much uncertainty, Cobalt said, the recommendation is to make the budget cuts in the hope that enough funding will come through to restore some of the cuts. One bit of good news is that the property values have risen slightly and therefore property tax could provide a bit of extra revenue. The recommended cuts were also chosen in an effort to have as little impact on classrooms and children as possible, said Superintendent Lisa Taylor. Among those are moving the Futures Unlimited Alternative Education Program to the Alternative Education Center, housed in the former Technical Academy building on East El Dorado Street, pulling special education teachers, social workers, and speech pathologists from the Macon-Piatt Special Education District and employing them directly, reducing summer camp from 750 students to 500, reorganizing Phoenix Academy and athletic director positions, reduced two elementary level class size positions, reorganization of the information technology department, delaying purchase of MacBooks for middle school students. No decisions were made Tuesday, which was intended as discussion only. End of that article. Next front page article, business. Cheap oil buoys consumers shakes global governments. This is by the AP. Cheap oil be sticking around for a while. That reality is really wreaking havoc and causing uncertainty for some governments and businesses while creating financial windfalls for others. Less expensive crude is delighting consumers in some regions while leading to widespread job losses elsewhere. Oil has fallen from $107 to about $30 in the past 19 months. Furious production by the U.S. and OPEC led to an oversupply. Recently, a sluggish global economy has spurred concerns about demand. A recovery in oil prices depends on when supply and demand can get close to equilibrium. It could be a rocky ride. In a recent research note, Goldman Sachs predicted, quote, the path to a rebalanced market will be protracted and arduous, end quote. The U.S. government forecasts Brent crude, the international benchmark, will average $40 a barrel this year. Bank of America Merrill Lynch is a bit higher at $46 in their forecast. North America. U.S. households have saved hundreds of dollars on gasoline and heating oil. That's money they can spend in other areas of the economy. Businesses such as airlines that burn large amounts of fuel have been reaped savings in the billions. But energy company profits have plunged, as have their stocks. Layoffs and spending cuts by oil drillers have offset some of the boost from steady consumer spending. Meanwhile, states such as Alaska and North Dakota need to plug big budget gaps. The Energy Department expects a decline in U.S. oil production, but says oil will only average $38 this year. For new mines in Alberta's oil sands to cover costs, oil needs to be $85 to $95 a barrel, according to IHS Global Insight. Western Canadian Select Oil Sands crude recently traded around $15. Canadian oil companies have slashed budgets, laid off tens of thousands of workers, and cut dividends. A Bank of Canada report says companies see dramatic change for the global industry, with weaker companies restructuring or exiting the oil business, while healthier companies buy distressed assets. Mexico is better insulated nowadays from an oil collapse. Oil accounts for 20% on national revenue, compared with 40% up until 2012. However, the country has postponed or canceled some oil projects. Mideast, Saudi Arabia and Iraq have been furiously pumping oil per OPEC's decision to maintain robust production. Their hope is that the 12-year lows in crude prices will push more expensive producers, such as U.S. shale drillers, out of the market. OPEC's production rose by an average 1 million barrels a day in 2015. Now, Iran, free of Western sanctions, plans to boost production by 500,000 barrels a day. Saudi Arabia cut back on some fuel subsidies and anticipates an $87 billion budget shortfall this year. Iraq diverted money from construction projects to fund a costly war against the Islamic State. Baghdad also started discussions with international oil companies operating in the oil-rich south to revisit the terms of their service contracts. Asia. China's economy grew by 6.9% in 2015, the country's slowest rate in 25 years, raising concerns about global economic strength and contributing to the oil price decline. Still, China's economy is hardly collapsing. The International Energy Agency predicts oil consumption in China will grow 3.4% this year, down from 6% in 2015. With a growing emphasis on the service sector, China should see less oil demand from heavy industry and construction. That will likely be offset by growing car ownership and more demand for petrochemicals. For most of Asia, plunging oil prices have alleviated heavy costs for imported oil and gas. For exporting nations, low oil helps and hurts. Auto exports to countries like the U.S. are profitable, but countries such as Brazil and Russia are tightening their belts after spurging on consumer goods from Asia when commodity prices soared. In Japan, consumers are paying less for energy, but lower energy prices are hindering the government's battle against deflation. Europe. Low oil prices are a boost to the European economy, which is a net importer of oil and gas. It helps consumers in two ways, by making fuel cheaper and lowering the costs of making goods. That lower cost feeds through to help bring down consumer prices in shops. Analysts at Capital Economics say lower oil prices boosted GDP in the 19-country union by about 1 percentage point last year. However, the low prices hinder the European Central Bank's effort to get inflation back up to around 2%. Some fear that a prolonged period of low inflation can encourage consumers to put off spending in the knowledge that goods won't get more expensive. Russia. Russia's economy shrank by 3.7% last year, its worst contraction since 2009. Oil and gas together contribute about half of state revenues. The government now anticipates cuts to the budget for fiscal 2016, which is based on oil price of $50 per barrel. Poorer Russians are already feeling the squeeze from falling wages and last year's rapid rise in food prices, driven by Russia's anti-sanctions ban on Western food. But Russian oil production hit a post-Soviet high of 11.1 million barrels a day in 2015, according to the International Agency. According to the International Energy Agency, which expects production to tail off somewhat as 2016 proceeds. Two countries to go here. Well, areas. Latin America. Across Latin America, drilling projects are being shelved and governments are slashing spending. The IMF is predicting a second straight annual contraction in the region's economies. The last time growth was negative for two straight years was in the debt crisis of the 1980s, which was partly fueled by an oil bust. Venezuela is the nation hardest hit. The government earns 95% of its export income from oil. For smaller countries in Central America and the Caribbean that import oil, the lower prices are a relief. And lastly, Africa. These are sobering times for Africa's two biggest oil producers. Oil previously provided 80% of government revenue in Nigeria and 70% in Angola. Nigeria's 2016 budget is double that of 2015 and based on $38 oil, so the government plans to borrow heavily. Angola's budget is based on a price of $40, down from an earlier benchmark of 81. Both countries' currencies have plunged against the dollar. The depreciation has resulted in higher food prices. End of that article. Continuing with Section A, Government and Politics, Shelbyville mulls $2 million water project. This is by Sharon Barkalow for the Herald and Review. Shelbyville. The Shelbyville City Council is considering a possible $2 million project to replace aging water meters and add computerized billing for users of the city's water system. The council will vote later this month on a plan to install new electronic meters that transmit information directly to the water billing department, eliminating the need for manual meter reading. The proposal would include the cost of the meters and their installation, along with the radio signal transmitting towers throughout the service area to send the information. The project would cost $256,000 a year over 7 years and come with a 15-year warranty. We're talking about a multi-million dollar project when you factor in the cost of the billing software, Council Member Brent Fogelman said. I, for one, would like to know more about how it has worked for other communities. Well, electronic metering is common in larger cities. Packaging the cost, installation, and maintenance of the meters into one contract is new for Shelbyville. Council Member Bill Schwoff, who oversees the Water and Sewer Department, said the contract is similar to one Shelbyville already had for maintenance of the city's water towers. That particular program has worked out very well, Schoff said. When we had a leak in a tower several months ago, it was fixed quickly without any additional cost to us, and it didn't require extra time from our workers. If Shelbyville approves the plan, it will take 9 months to upgrade the meters. The council will also have to purchase billing software at the cost of $40,000. The new system will enable consumers to pay their bills online and also provide more accurate and timely billing. Current water bills are 2 months behind in actual usage. The new meters would also detect unusual usage in homes and businesses, hopefully leading to quicker leak repairs. The new meter proposal comes on the same night that Schoff told the council work would have to be done on the city's oldest water well. We've done some repairs, but now we have to consider overhauling the entire well, he said. It's been in service for 60 years and understandably requires some maintenance. End of that article. Local article here. As we continue on, Matheny delivers message to Fellowship of Christian Athletes. This is by Justin Kahn, an H&R staff writer. Effingham, I forgive you, St. Louis Cardinals manager Mike Matheny told a crowd gathered at the Keller Convention Center for Tuesday's Fellowship of Christian Athletes Champions Luncheon. I forgive you for what you're thinking when I got this job, Matheny added, causing the large crowd to erupt with laughter. It wasn't that funny, Matheny responded, smiling. For once, I'd love to hear crickets when I said that, but it's a roar every time. 4 years after replacing Tony La Russa as Cardinals manager, Matheny has proven that what looked like a questionable hire at the time, a former player with no managerial experience replacing a Hall of Famer, was a shrewd move. The Cardinal has made the postseason all four of Matheny's seasons as manager, including three straight National League Central Division titles. But Matheny, who was involved with FCA for years, first as a player and later as a member of the National Board, admitted when he was first hired, I was in over my skis. For advice, Matheny said he went to La Russa, who'd been Matheny's manager during his playing days in St. Louis. I got two notepads and two pens because I was sure I was going to run out of ink in the first one, Matheny said. He told me, first, learn something new every day. So I write that down and I say, okay, what's next? And he says, learn something new every day. At that point, I think Tony thinks I'm still suffering from concussion syndrome. But he said, no, you're hearing me, but not listening. In any setting, if you just focus on getting better, it's going to look like you want it to look. Learn something new every day. Matheny spoke for an hour, telling the crowd about when he first began taking his Christianity seriously, his struggle to assert his beliefs and his thoughts on leadership. Among the stories he shared was current Cardinals player Matt Carpenter's journey from a player no Major League Baseball team even looked at after his senior year in Texas Christian to an MLB MVP candidate. When the Cardinals signed him, his signing bonus was an apple on a roadmap, Matheny said, but he went to work. He had talent, but there are loads of guys with talent. That's not where his edge was. That's not where his edge was at. He knew he had to fight for it. He got to where he is today with toughness and grit. Matheny's story of Carpenter resonated with Salem sophomore Max Phillips. Quote, a lot of what he said really hit home with a lot of us, Phillips said. I think what he had to say about God and baseball was really important. End of the article. Now to crime and courts. Man charged with breaking woman's arm in drunken rage. This is by Huey Freeman, an H&R staff writer, Decatur. Police officers who arrived at a West Side apartment Friday evening to investigate a possible domestic violence incident heard the sound of a woman crying. I knocked on the door and could hear the woman state something like stop, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer James Weddle. Weddle. I knocked once more and I heard the female shout, help. Officer Alex Amaya then forced the door open and the two officers entered the apartment in the 1000 block of West Main Street. They saw a woman lying on the floor crying. David L. O'Malley, 27, was standing in the room. She told the officers that O'Malley had twisted her wrist. O'Malley was arrested and booked in the Macon County Jail on a charge of domestic battery with a prior conviction. His bond was set at $5,000. The woman, who was extremely intoxicated and unable to provide any further information, later went to Decatur Memorial Hospital for treatment. Police subsequently discovered that the woman's arm was broken and she suffered numerous bruises. O'Malley was then arrested at the jail on additional charges. His bond was increased by $100,000. When Weddle visited the hospital January 30th, medical personnel told him the victim's arm was broken in three places. They said the injury was consistent with somebody grabbing and twisting her arm. DMH staff advised they noted 10 sites of bruising on the victim's body, which was consistent with her statement that David beat her all over the body. Weddle wrote in his statement. At the hospital, the victim appeared to be sober and better shape to speak about the incident. She said that it began when she and O'Malley had been drinking, and he asked her if she saw the show called Snapped. When she said she hadn't, he grabbed her by the hair and threw her to the floor. She attempted to call the police, but O'Malley ripped the phone out of her hand, the victim told police. O'Malley then began striking her with a closed fist and kicking her all over her body and her face. When the officers arrived, he was still on top of her. O'Malley grabbed her around the neck and applied pressure so she could not breathe. O'Malley continued strangling her so that she was unable to tell the police to come inside the residence. She was eventually able to get O'Malley's hand away from her neck and to say stop and help. O'Malley was arraigned Tuesday on two counts of aggravated domestic battery and one count each of domestic battery with a prior conviction and interfering with reporting of domestic violence. He is due in court February 10th for a preliminary hearing. End of that court report. Continuing with a set of local briefs. Decatur, accident spills grain. Illinois 105 at the intersection with 70th Street in Macon County was closed just after 7 a.m. Tuesday due to a cleanup from a minor injury crash involving a semi-truck and spilled grain, according to the Illinois State Police. The truck collided with another vehicle, according to the state police. The grain cleanup was completed by mid-afternoon and all the roadways reopened. Next, Forsyth, low-income energy aid. Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corps will be accepting applications for low-income energy assistance from 9 to 11:30 Friday, February 5th, in Hickory Point Township Hall, 2240 West Ash Avenue at the corner of West Ash and Northwest Lawn Avenues. Applicants must live in Hickory Point Township, Macon County. The program is for low-income people who fall within certain income guidelines. For more information, call the township at 877-6308, 877-6308. Next, Shelbyville, lake levels receding. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said Tuesday the water levels are receding at Lake Shelbyville. The pool elevations has decreased to 13.61 feet above the normal winter pool level of 594 above sea level. The level as of 7 a.m. Tuesday was 607 feet due to large amounts of rain. The Corps said flooding continues to affect some sites around the lake with boat launch facilities open in all major recreation areas, but secondary boat ramps remaining closed, including ones at Coal Shaft Bridge and Sand Cove Road, Johnson's Bluff, and Bruce West. The Chief Illini Trail, Coon Creek Nature Trail, and Okaw Bluff Trail are all closed. Hikers and bikers can use the Camp Camfield Trail and General Dacey Trail. For more information, call the Lake Shelbyville Project Office at 774-3951. 774-3951. Decatur, St. Patrick Kindergarten. Kindergarten screening will be at 8 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. Tuesday, February 16th, at St. Patrick School, 412 North Jackson Street. Children must be age 5 on or before September 1st. For an appointment, call 423-4351. 423-4351. End of the shorts. We'll close out Section 1, February 3rd, Decatur, with a short article, A Visitor Accused of Purse Theft, by Huey Freeman, an H&R staff writer. Clarence Williams, a 56-year-old man who was eating regularly at the Good Samaritan Inn, was arrested after he was caught on video surveillance tape as he allegedly stole a purse in the vehicle of a donor to the facility. At 12:55 p.m. Wednesday, January 13, a woman drove with her female friend to the near Northside Soup Kitchen to make a donation. Clarence Williams waited till the two women entered the building and then went to the SUV, said the probable cause affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Jeremy Appenzeller. He opened the doors to the vehicle and removed a purse containing a cell phone, about $130, and a house key. When the two women returned to the parking area, they observed Clarence reaching inside the vehicle. Clarence ran westbound through the parking lot away from the scene carrying a black purse. A police canine tracked the flight path and located the stolen black purse, which was now empty. When a Good Samaritan employee reviewed the surveillance video, he recognized the burglar as someone who frequently eats at the facility. Just prior to the burglar, the employee is seen on the video as he speaks with them. That employee identified Williams in a photo lineup. That is the end of what we're reading of this article in Section 1, Decatur, Herald and Review for February 3rd. Talk to you again soon.